So here, about the five lines down in the Gemara in Kavav Amud Aleph, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Beit Knesset Lokhin Teva. If you sell a synagogue, you can upgrade to... You could upgrade to buy in Aron Kodesh. So Omer Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Yonatan. My eyes are a little playing tricks on me tonight. So Lo Shanu Ella, Mazel Lo Shanu Ella.
The only top in the case.
Who's they?
The Mishnah,
right? It's limiting the scope of a teaching of the Mishnah. This law that when you sell a synagogue, you can only buy a teva is limited to Beit Knesset Shel. A rural synagogue. Aval Beit Knesset Shel Krachin, an urban synagogue, Kevan de Ma'alma Atu, Lei, Lo Matsu Mizabne Lei. But an urban synagogue can never be sold. Why? Because people come from all over to daven in that synagogue. You know, like the Great Synagogue? Who owns the Great Synagogue?
Part of the church.
Is that true?
No,
I think it's the city of Jerusalem.
Otherwise,
I mean, there's an
Amutah.
Otherwise,
somebody would be paying Al Nona.
Except that's not true. I mean, it doesn't matter what it says on the mashkanta, assuming the building has a mashkanta. I presume that Yeshurun is paid off by now. But we're not talking who owns it for the purposes of taxes. We're talking about who owns it for the spiritual kinyan. Urban synagogues are owned by Aliyin, all the Jews in the world. Why? Because people come from all over to daven there. Right? Now there's Lahavdil. Think of like great public structures. The Melbourne, the Sydney Opera House. Right? So could you imagine like the city of Sydney would say, hey, you know what, we need to put a parking garage there. We're gonna knock down the opera house and put a parking lot. The world would be in an uproar. Can you imagine they said the plaza in front of the Kotel?
Give me a Starbucks.
Well, we should put up apartment houses. You can get a lot of money for those. The world would be... There's certain public spaces that are what they call in the UN the World Heritage Sites. So by then, hopefully, there'll be Yemot HaMashiach and the world will recognize the truth. But if that were to happen...
Yeah, but I have a problem with this argument the other way.
Yeah.
If you have a village, let's say you have like a flat, okay?
A flat.
Let's say a flat. And you want to get rid of a Beit Knesset in a flat because the Gemara is saying it's okay because it's not a big city. Excuse me, all the people that are coming from Chavot to Yerushalayim have to pass through Gush Etzion. They're going to use this.
No, I don't know. It's not the same. Look, it's also true in the Kfar. Right, that is your wagon breaks down. You lose a wagon wheel on Erev Shabbos near the shtetl. That's where you're spending Shabbos.
But it might be that.
But it's not the same as saying.
Owns a synagogue too.
It could be in a big town. Somebody owns a synagogue. But the question is this something that we would consider to be a kind of world heritage site? Right. So, in other words,
the only Beit Knesset in the Kfar.
Yeah. So the Beit Knesset in the Kfar is either owned by an individual, or it's owned in partnership by all the townsmen. And they can decide that they want to sell it, but the vad of a shul in a city, even though they're authorized to manage the affairs of the synagogue, they cannot sell it. That's a question.
Because if you're telling me that we own the kinyan of, we don't own the physical building, but we own the kinyan of what goes on in the building. So can we technically take what goes on in the building and just move it down the block?
Well, they can, because they're in America.
Or move it to a smaller building.
This is a shiloh about moving synagogues and changing neighborhoods. This is what we talked about last week, the example I gave of Newark, where my mother grew up. So, Beit Knesset Shel Krachin, Kevan de Ma'alma Atule, since from the whole wide world people come to it, Lo Matsu Mezabne Le, Dehave Le, Derabim. The synagogue, in some intents and purposes, is public property, and it cannot be sold by the trustees of the synagogue. So Omer of Ashi, Hai Beit Knishta Demasa Machzia. Masa Machzia was a town. It wasn't a city. It was a town between Sura and Pambadita, between Pambadita and Narda. It was somewhere in Bavel. Does he have a map of it there?
No.
Afal Gav de Ma'alma Atule Kevan de Adate de Dekaatu. Iboina Mizabnin Le. Rav Ashi was the rabbi of this place, Masa Machasya. It was a little place, but its significance was in that Rav Ashi lived there and he taught there. You ever go through Eastern Europe? I was once in Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania. I was traveling and, you know, we're on a bus going from one place to another. And so you pull into this little town, you know, it's like literally like a one-horse town, and the bus driver calls out, Ponovich! Right, so we think Ponovich is like a great metropolis. I assure you, it's a smaller place. Even Volozhin, right? You think of Volozhin, like the great yeshiva. So you've seen pictures of the Volozhin yeshiva. It wasn't much bigger than this space medrash. It was not a very big... You wonder, like, how could be our imagination? There were. You ever been to the Mir here in Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
The Mir in Yerushalayim is like
100 times bigger than what the original was.
100 times, 1,000 times. There's like 1,300 guys learn in the main base medrash, and then you have all the ancillary base medrash. So you go, you pass through these places, right? There are more people that daven in like some side minion in Ponovich for Mincha on a weekday than lived in the whole town of Ponovich. The significance of Masa Machzia was that Rav Ashi was there. But since he was there, people came from all over. People came from all over. So, what's the Havamina?
That
it takes on the din as a big city. So he says, no. He says, but because they're coming for me, in other words, I built the shul, and they're coming to see me, right? So it doesn't take on this status of a world monument. And therefore, if I want, I can sell it.
So why can't you say that about any shul?
Because other shuls are not built in that way.
Why not? One person puts together the money, he builds the shul.
But that's not an achinami. If that was the case, then he would be able to sell it. But normally that's not how synagogues get built. Right? This synagogue was not built by one person. But if you were here for the appeal on Shabbat, you understand that it literally takes a village to build the second floor. There's no one person who could claim that he's the Baalim, he's the owner of the synagogue. Right? And even though there were people that were more involved and there were people that were less involved in getting it going, it's communal property. And it can only be sold by the collective, by the democracy.
So wasn't this built? You would have a place to teach?
What? No, this was not built for me. No. Believe it or not. So now the Gemara says, Shmuel Bar Nachmani said, this din that you can, if you sell a Beit Knesset, you have to upgrade, is only talking about a suburban synagogue and not an urban synagogue, because the urban synagogues are in a different category. So now the Gemara says Mesve.
But one second. But if you were to take, for example, Rabbi Tanu's shul in Muncie. You built a shul for Rabbi Tanu.
Yeah.
Or take Rabbi Wein's shul in Muncie. You built a shul for Rabbi Wein.
Yeah, so it could
so
be.
When Rabbi Wein made Aliyah,
it could be that they could make that claim.
Yeah, we're still a big city.
Well, we'll see. But is Muncie a big city?
Well, let's see. Muncie is a big city. So when Rabbi Wein made Aliyah, technically speaking, you could have sold the shul.
In theory, yes.
I mean, you were going to because you had like.
In theory, these examples could be.
Would be true. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, Mesve. The Gemara now attacks this. Omer be Yehuda. Ma'ase bevet ha-knesset shel tursiim. Tursiim are metal workers. Yeah, copper workers. This was quite common. They have still, like in Manhattan, there's the garment workers shul.
And also the people in the show business.
In show business?
Yeah. The show,
there's still people in show business.
Jews in show business?
Who would have thought?
I knew somebody whose father was actually a rabbi.
Wait, where is this show business shul? In Broadway? So I think the garment workers shul only has a minion like during the week. They don't have because nobody lives there anymore in that neighborhood during, for Shabbos. So I think I was down there not long ago when I was last in.
I want to say that years ago that, like on Yom Tov, if all people work on Yom Tov, they come to the city.
Yeah.
It's like, thousands of people come through.
Right. Anyway, so this Beit Knesset of the Tursiim, there were guilds, and there were sometimes people like the tanners had to have their own minion because nobody else wanted to daven with them. Right, so there were these synagogues that were organized around in Yerushalayim. Where they have? Where do they have? I don't know. Remember the old the old Eged. I don't. The truth is, I never take the bus, and I'm embarrassed to say I've only once ever been in the Tachna Merkazi, the new Tachna Merkazi in Yerushalayim.
You're not missing much.
Yeah, but the old Tachna Merkazit, remember that shul, the old Tachna Merkazit,
in the back,
where they had the seats were like repurposed benches from the back of the bus.
Yep.
It's like the.
Most of the main central bus stations have those shul.
Yeah.
Supermarkets.
Supermarket. Yeah. Everything has shul. That's not the same as saying. It's not like saying that the shul at Eged is the bus driver's shul. So anyway, so there was this copper miners, not copper miners, copper workers. Shul Shehaya B'Yerushalayim. Shemachruhu Rabbi Eliezer. So why is that a mesve? What's the attack here? Yeah, because Yerushalayim is a city.
Yeah, right? but its only purpose is for the sake of the copper workers.
Huh?
Same thing here. The only person.
So what do you want to say?
The
halacha of Shmuel Bar Nachmani about city shuls has its limitations.
Right.
But it's the same example with the Rav.
With the Rav,
I went there for a reason. It wasn't because it was a big city per se, because there was something drawing them there, which was external to the city.
Maybe. The city. Anyway, so they sold it to Rabbi Eliezer. Va'asab bo kol tzarchav. Mazel tov, asab bo kol tzarchav.
To spend it specifically on.
No, in other words, they got money. Rabbi Eliezer paid money to the copper workers.
Right.
What could the copper workers do with that money? No. They had to upgrade. Right? But the sale worked, meaning with the transfer of the money, the kedusha is transferred to the money. The copper workers now have this money that they have limitations with what they can do with it, but the building is now desacralized. Right? It's no longer a holy space, and he can use it as a barn. Vaha. Hatam dikrachin hava, but that was in Yerushalayim. That was in a city. They shouldn't have been able to sell it at all. But what do we see from the case? they sold it, and the sale worked. And it's, if it was usher for them to sell it, if halachically such a building can't be sold, and they come along and they change money, so what happens?
It wouldn't affect it.
It wouldn't affect it. And if Rabbi Eliezer used that building as a barn or as a discotheque, he's violating the sanctity of a synagogue. But that's not what happens. Not that Rabbi Eliezer would set up a synagogue, but a barn. You might need a barn. You know what a barn is? What we call a garage. It's where you keep your car. When your car was
in. I thought it was just a place to put all your junk.
Yeah.
You just put a car there?
We don't have garages.
Nobody told me that.
So, hahi bekenishta zute hava. No. This copper workers synagogue was. How do you translate bekenishta zute?
Small. A shtibel.
A shtibel. What does shtibel mean? A room, like a little room, right? A prayer house, right? A prayer house is not the same as a synagogue. Right? Ve'inhu avduha. And they made it. They, the copper workers, made it for their own purpose, maybe because nobody else wanted to be with them. So it did not have, even though it was in Yerushalayim. So we see what? We see that the halacha of a city synagogue...
The example of Rav Ashi, he built it for a specific purpose.
Yeah, no, but that, but Rav Ashi was not in a city; it was in a village or in a town.
But the points behind Rav Ashi was like they built the synagogue for a specific purpose of Rav Ashi, and if Rav Ashi moved on, then the synagogue can move on. They said, "Here, you built it for a specific purpose, for the sake of the couple workers."
Yeah, no, but except. This halacha about not selling an urban synagogue because everybody goes there. The case of Rav Ashi is saying, what about a suburban synagogue that everybody goes there? In other words, what's the determining variable here? Is it the fact that it's in a city, or is it the fact that it's a place that everybody goes to, and we assume that you don't have a case of everybody goes there in a village? So here's the test case. Rav Ashi, it's a village synagogue that everybody goes to. So he would be allowed to sell it. But not because it's in a village. Right? And despite the fact that everybody comes there. No. But that's not what he said. What does Rav Ashi say? Because it's all because of me. Right? And as this is private property. And if everybody comes to see me, right, it doesn't ipso facto turn it into a public building, right? It's just right. A public building. What is it? It has to be a synagogue that's in a city that everybody comes to. So Rav Ashi says, "Look, they're not coming because of the city; they're coming because of me. So I built the synagogue. It is my synagogue. They all came because of before I moved to town. No one ever came to this."
In that case, you could sell 7-7. It all came because of the Rebbe. The Rebbe's not there anymore.
Well, some people say he is.
No, he's still playing.
Could be.
I'm not sure where, but he's still playing. But he's definitely...
And Al-Khinami. Could be.
Anyway.
So wait, but that we were only talking about a synagogue in a rural
No, so but the point of Rav Ashi is that we can't determine anything based upon the larger principles. It's a standalone case. Fine. So let's look at a case. Let's look at a case in a city. The case in the city is the copper workers. So the copper workers, they did sell it. So aha, you see, there are examples of urban synagogue. Wait a second. There are cases of an urban synagogue that can be sold.
But that's not a general case.
Might not be a general case.
It's a zuta.
It's a zuta.
Because copper people could be like the tanner. You don't want to come there and mess it up.
Right.
Also, it could be the fact that the copper people themselves erected, so it's not really a public building. It's a private building.
Yes, perhaps. And the Gemara gives both reasons. One is it's small, and the other is that they did it kind of on their own. It was their private union, and they were able to... Right. So
we learned from the case of Rav Ashi was only with regard to a rural synagogue.
No, we don't know. It's a rural synagogue, but it met one of the criteria of a synagogue that can't be sold. Right? which is everybody goes there. The whole wide world shows up. So maybe that's what creates this idea that you can't sell the synagogue ever. Ah, but Rav Ashi says he could have sold that synagogue despite the fact that everybody goes there. Why? Because it's his, because it's private. Now, he doesn't say because we're not in a city. Right? So in other words, we don't know what's the determining factor. Right? So let's go back to a case of, so we need a second case, a case of a Yerushalayim synagogue, a city synagogue that was, as you see, that there are examples. There are cases where a city synagogue can be sold in the case of the copper workers.
But that again is exceptional.
Okay. Right. So which is why we're, look, you learned ahead. So you know where this is going. Which is my way of saying keep your pants on.
Okay.
So here's a third attack. Right, here's a third slice into trying to figure this out. Bevet Eretz Achuzatchem. Now what this is really one of those cases where you know you see the associative nature of the Gemara. What is the case? What is the pasuk Bevet Eretz Achuzatchem? Excellent. How do you know it? It says in the Arts Group. Okay. Saras. Saras Abatim. The impurity that can affect the building, where the building gets spots, and the Kohen has to come and see it, and maybe sometimes the building has to be knocked down. Which may or may not have ever happened. Although we do have Retivut. But we in Yerushalayim, we lived in an apartment for a number of years, and it was lovely. And then Pitom, after living there for 5 years, Pitom, we got a Maka of Retivut. It was just, it took over the whole living room. And, well, the people upstairs did some shiputzim, and they probably, like, cracked the side of the building, let some water in or something, and so the night before, anyway, we were arguing with them that they had to, you know, take care of it. Lonnie was pregnant with Ora, with our second child. Yeah, and they were going to take care of it, and then she was born a month early, and they hadn't taken care of it. We're bringing home a newborn baby from the hospital, and we have this mold. So the night before she comes home from the hospital, I'm up on a ladder. It was one of those in Baca, you know, with the tall ceilings. I'm up on a ladder scraping off this. So you can. Yeah, it was terrible. So what's Beit Eretz Achuzatchem? A house in the land of your Achuza. Mazachuza? Your heritage, but it's more than your heritage. It's achiza. It's
they translate it as inheritance.
Inheritance. But achiza means to hold on to something. A homesteader. The homesteader's act. Right? Beit Eretz Achuzatchem, not every building can be susceptible to tumah. In other words, if you have a spot on your wall, you have to call the Kohen. But not every building with a spot, there's some buildings where we know it can't be a tzorat, it's just retivut, because this building is the type of building which is not susceptible to tzorat. Which kind of building is that? It's a building which is not held as private property, as achuza. So the Gemara says, Beit Eretz Achuzatchem. Achuzatchem mitma b'negoyim, ve'en Yerushalayim mitma b'negoyim. But Yerushalayim, buildings in Yerushalayim, are not susceptible to tumah. If it has a stain on the wall, it's just a stain. Call the painters.
So that's why you didn't call the Kohen.
That's why I didn't call the Kohen, yeah. So Omer Rabbi Yehuda. Ani lo shamati ela makom mikdash bilvad. V'ha batek nesu debate midrashot mitmin. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no. the Makom HaMikdash is not susceptible to Tumat Sarat. But a shul or a Beis Medrash in Yerushalayim, in theory, could become. Amai had the krochin havu. Wait a second. A shul in Yerushalayim is a... A shul in Yerushalayim is
an urban city.
It can't be sold. Why can't it be sold? And therefore that turns it into a
public
national trust. It's not Eretz Achuzatchem. It's not private property. It's public property. And therefore no synagogue in Yerushalayim should be susceptible to Tumah. Hava'ema, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shemati ela makom mikudash bilvad. So you have to reread it. In other words, don't say that he limited this halakha. That Yerushalayim, you can't get Tumah Yerushalayim only the Beit HaMikdash, because then you have a problem with synagogue. The great synagogue in Yerushalayim should not be susceptible to Tumah. Why?
Because
it's public property. It's not private property. Wait a second. The great synagogue in Yerushalayim should not be susceptible to Tumah because it's public property. Public property cannot become Tumah with Tzaras. So how can you... Ben, hold on a second. The great synagogue in Yerushalayim should not be susceptible to Tumah because it is public property, not private property. Right? That's why it can't be sold. But wait a second. How could you say it could be... What's the Hava mean that it could be that this limitation of Tumah only applies to Makom HaMikdash and not to other places? Meaning, if it only applied to Makom HaMikdash, then you would have to say that other synagogues in Yerushalayim, in theory, could become Tumah. If they could become Tumah, that means they would be private. And if they're private, therefore, they would be sold. So we have a stira. So no, you have to reread what he said. He doesn't say Makom HaMikdash Bilvad, Ela Makom Mikudash, sanctified space. Not Beit HaMikdash, but sanctified space cannot become Tameh because those places in the cities are public property, and public property cannot become Tameh with Negoyim. And therefore, it all squares together. Okay, Ben, you can take your pants off now.
No, I have a question.
Yes?
I don't understand how this meant they jump to Tzarat, or Beit Achuzah. Because Beit Achuzah is the defining term here. Something is a Beit Achuzah.
Yeah, that's what the Gemara learns. That's what the Gemara learns from that Pasuk. Right? That which houses can become Tameh? Batei Achuzah. Private property, but public property is not susceptible to Tumah. Just like kelim, there are kelim that are susceptible to Tumah, and there are kelim that are not susceptible to Tumah. Same thing with the houses. There are houses that can become that can get Surat, and there are houses that cannot get Surat. You understand how you understand the flow of the Gemara now?
I'm not understanding why we jumped. In other words, what's the point of the Meitvei?
The Meitvei is like this. The Gemara said that in Yerushalayim synagogues cannot be sold,
right,
because they are
public
property. Meitvei. Oh yeah? Maybe synagogues in Yerushalayim are not public property. What's the Havamina to say that synagogues in Yerushalayim are not public property? So here's the litmus test. If they can be get Surat, if they can get Surat, that would be a raya that they're not public property, right? Now, in a parallel universe, you could say, it's not the halacha, it's not what our Gemara says, but in a parallel universe, you could say, yes, there are synagogues in Yerushalayim that can get Surat, they're meaning that they're private property. So that contradicts our halacha that synagogues in cities are public property, can't be sold. So what would the parallel universe the mirror universe Gemara do there? How would a Gemara resolve such a contradiction?
Say the opposite, that only that it's not a Veda, who's it? Well, it can't do that.
No, in other words, in a pack, how does the Gemara, you have two seemingly contradictory sources, right? In other words, either a synagogue is a private institution or a public institution. So you have one source that says it's a private institution, and you have one source that says it's a public institution. Meitve, it's a contradiction, it's an attack of one on the other. So our Gemara resolves that problem quite neatly. But if we didn't have that resolution, what would you anticipate the next step in the Gemara would have been? Remember, the Gemara is largely motivated by this desire to resolve conflict.
Showing that somehow it's an exceptional case.
Either it's an exceptional case, or...
Or Sarat is different.
Apples and oranges. Mm. No. It looks like a contradiction. It's not. Right? For the purposes of Sarat, the din is this. But for the purposes of selling Beit Knesset, there's a different controlling variable. Right? That would be a classical way the Gemara would... Or the Gemara would say... Or the Gemara would say these are two different traditions, right? And Ochinami, there is a machloket, but one of these traditions is rejected, right? And the other one is in control. Or a Gemara might have said, again, this is all hypothetical because it's not what the Gemara says. Yeah, no. Or the Gemara might have said you're reading of the sources all messed up. When the Gemara says Beit Eretz Achuzatchem, it's not talking about this; it's talking about that. These are all hypothetical. This is not the case because the Gemara doesn't need to do this, right? But these are all things. When you have a contradiction, you should be able to anticipate what line of attack the Gemara might take. Now, in this case, the Gemara rereads the source, saying that the synagogues are susceptible to Tumah. They're not. Because it doesn't mean Mikdash, it means Mikudash. We extend what we thought was the principle to all of the sanctuaries in Yerushalayim, not just to Beit HaMikdash.
Doesn't that leave us with one difficulty?
Yeah.
The copper workers...
No, so the copper workers, that's still... It doesn't mean... Not every place that people gather to worship has the din of a... You can still have a private house of prayer, right? Good. But according to the Hava Amina, according to what we thought the Gemara was saying, it would mean even the great synagogue, even Yeshurun, even Bells, right? You've seen Bells? Mm-hmm. You're new in town. Bells is this, it looks like an airplane hangar, right? It's what do they say? They have this thing. Oh, yeah, I forgot there's a Yiddish word for it. I forgot.
Is Bells bigger than Mahon Mail?
Bigger than?
Than Mir?
No, the building is bigger. In other words, Mir has a lot of different buildings. But the Bells building, I think the Bells building might be the largest.
Probably one of the biggest.
So in Bells, the room is so big, they have this thing on the bima that they claw. It's like a patish that they claw. It's like a pillow, right, with a hammer. It's not a pillow. It's like a padded... It's probably like a block of wood with like a pad over it that they bang on with this mallet in order to get people's attention. Like when it's time for Ashrei or something, or when they start before they start Chazar Zashat. So like if they have to remind everybody Yala Viovo, they bang, because otherwise there's no way to. I heard of a good patent that they came up with in Kfar Etzion. You know, this is a problem with the women come to say Kaddish. So we're all very liberal and enlightened, and at least in principle, in our synagogue, women say Kaddish, and we try to accommodate that by making sure that somebody's always saying Kaddish, which, more or less, it's the case de facto. But the practice, the halacha shein morin kain, is that the shaliach tzibur, if no one else is saying Kaddish, the shaliach tzibur should say the Kaddish. And then if a woman is saying Kaddish, she can say it along with him. But how do you don't always know if there's a woman back there behind the mechitza, or mechitza is so hermetically sealed.
Kaddish.
No, so in the in the shul in Kfar Etzion, they put in this patent. There's a little, like a light switch in the Ezra's Nashim. And if a woman comes and she wants to say Kaddish, she turns it on, and there's a little green light or whatever color it is that lights up, you know, above the amud, to know that somebody has to accommodate this. Like they have this great new thing. Like suddenly it showed up in all the parking lots.
The green and red lights.
You know where the open spots are, instead of having to inch your way down. It's such a great button.
Like in Mamila, they have it in the mall now.
In Mamila, in all the malls, they have it. In the Cinema City, they have it. Okay. So ha, bate knesset, bate midrashos, mitmin. Mokom kudosh bavad. B'mai kemiflegei. So what are they arguing about? Tanakama savar lo nitchalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Nitchalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim. Who owns Yerushalayim? In other words, Yerushalayim is in whose Shevet? Yeah, so where does Washington, D.C. reside?
Washington, D.C.
It's extraterritorial.
That's where it is now.
Not in any of the states.
But before Washington, D.C. was established, who owned that property? Washington, D.C. is a... No. Washington, D.C. is a... It's more or less a diamond-shaped 12-square-mile area. Before Washington, D.C. was established...
Which was when?
It was after Kom HaMdina, but it was before. No, it was before. It was before. It was before the Constitution, right? And this was the compromise, this famous dinner with Jefferson and Hamilton and Adams, right? This famous dinner, the compromise that they would. The federal government would
not be within one.
No. The federal government would accept the state's debts. As during the Articles of Confederation, right, between the Revolutionary War, which was in 1776, and the establishment of, when did George Washington become president?
After the Constitutional Congress, no?
Yeah, that was in the 1792. 1792. Right, Washington was president from 1792 till 1800. Well, the election was in 1800, and 1800 was the problem. They had this election where Jefferson and Burr tied in the Electoral College. And in the old days, before the 12th Amendment. Before the 12th Amendment, the vice president was the runner-up in the Electoral College.
Right.
That was changed, that you run on a party, that you have a candidate for president, a candidate for vice president. Burr and Jefferson ran against Adams. He beat Adams. Adams came in third place in that election. Jefferson and Burr tied. So the election was tossed to the House of Representatives, which could not resolve it. They had multiple ballots until finally Alexander Hamilton, it's told, negotiated a deal by which Jefferson was elected. This annoyed Burr. They had a bad end, the two of them. There's a musical about this now. Anyway, but from the Revolutionary War until Washington's inauguration, there were a number of years where there was no president, right? There was a Congress, there was a Speaker of the Congress, who was, in all effects and purposes, the most... No, but you don't know the names of any of those people. But for all intents and purposes, those were the presidents of the United States.
Washington had to be brought out of retirement. He was already
right. When Washington becomes president, when the Constitution goes into effect, and you have the presidency, and you have the three branches of government, and so there was a compromise. The northern northern states had incurred a huge debt to finance the war. The southern states, being agrarian, did not have that kind of capital. The South was afraid that the North was going to take over, and they were also afraid about preserving slavery. They understood that the North was less dependent on slavery and that there'd be a movement to do away with it. So the compromise was that with the adoption of the Constitution, the federal government accepted all of the states' war debts and paid it off, instead of the states having to be burdened with that debt. And the South, who didn't get much from that because they didn't have these debts, the South got in return that the capital would be not in New York or Philadelphia, but in between the Old Dominion. So they carved out space between Virginia, Northern Virginia, and Southern Maryland, and made, well, before the establishment of Washington, D.C., half of it was Virginia and half of it was Maryland. Virginia and Maryland each gave up of their territory to create this extraterritorial. Ad kan the history lesson. Where's Yerushalayim? Where's the Mokom HaMikdash? So it straddles Binyamin and Yehuda. But is it half Binyamin, half Yehuda? Or, like, you hear stories like this from time to time, that there are people whose houses straddle two municipal, you know, their front door is one municipality, their back door is another, and there's always an argument about whether they should be paying taxes.
You have it right up the block, in El Azar.
In El Azar?
In Netiv Avot.
Oh, yeah, well, that's...
Well, there's a house like that in Kansas City, that the front is Missouri, and then the other two states. He straddles the line between the two states.
Right. Who does he pay taxes to?
Both of them.
They put a percentage there and a percentage there. So what's Yerushalayim?
The guy is in
who owns Yerushalayim? So the question is, Ha'im Yerushalayim nitchalka l'shvatim? There's a general principle in the Chalukah. You know, they came, Yehoshua ben Nun comes into Eretz Yisrael. 40 years after they leave Egypt, Yehoshua ben Nun comes into Eretz Yisrael. From the moment that Yehoshua ben Nun and the Yidden crossed the Yarden, I've mentioned this a number of times, there has never been not one day, not one hour, that there were no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. There has been a continual Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael since the moment Yehoshua ben Nun crossed the Yarden. Now, there are times that there were very, very, very few Jews in Eretz Yisrael, but there has never been a time that there have been no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. When Yehoshua ben Nun comes in, they spend 7 years fighting the wars, and then another 7 years of what was called chiluk, divvying up. And parts, if you've learned, say, for Yehoshua, go back to 7th grade, or go back to your memories of when your kid was in 7th grade, you had that map, right? You know, like the Sefer Yehoshua, 7th grade, came with the map, right, of how the tribes were, how it was all divvied up. And you have these names of all of these cities that no one's ever heard of, except they all turned up again in modern Eretz Yisrael. Right? When they would found a yeshuv, right, they would name it. Now, the names of those yeshuvim today do not necessarily correspond to where they fit in the geography. Right? If you tried to draw the map today based upon the names of the places, and it would be hard to, you'd have to gerrymander, you know, the map. Right, I mean, that's true in general, not just for the Yehoshua names, but for everything. Wherever Rosh Tzurim was in Parshat Balak, it was not down the road, right? But it's a nice name. Let's assume Ephrat is Ephrat, but that's just a fiction we like to maintain.
Fits the narrative.
Yes. One of the klalim of the chiluk was that no city could be, you couldn't have a Washington D.C. by definition, cities had to be shayach to one shevet or to another. You couldn't divide up. You couldn't divide up a city. However, Yerushalayim may have been an exception. Was Yerushalayim divided between the tribes, the north to Binyamin and the south to Yehuda, or was Yerushalayim?
Yeshua didn't conquer it.
What?
Yeshua didn't conquer
Yerushalayim. No, but in other words, wherever the border line goes, the border lines were drawn, and within any given Shevet, there may have been territory that was still held by the right? And as we know, that Yerushalayim was not purchased until David HaMelech many years later.
Right?
David HaMelech goes to the Yevusim and he buys Yerushalayim. But the question is, but the borders are where the borders are. Right? So the border goes through the old city of Jerusalem. Right? So is Yerushalayim half Binyamin and half Yehuda, or is Yerushalayim Washington D.C.? It's neither Virginia nor nor Maryland, right?
I guess we'll learn why that shayach to an individual Beit Knesset in Yerushalayim, but
yes.
Because if Yerushalayim itself as a city doesn't belong to a Shevet, then technically speaking, none of the entities within that city belong to any specific Shevet. Therefore, all the public buildings of that city can't really technically belong to any specific
person. Uveflukta dehanai tnai, detanya, ma haya bechelko shel Yehuda, ma haya bechelko shel Yehuda. So there's this Mishnah that divvies things up. Says what was in Yehuda's shev, what was in Yehuda's chelik, and what was in Binyamin's chelik. So what was in Yehuda's chelik? Harabayit alishchaot v'ha'azarot u'maya bechelko shel Binyamin ulam v'heichalu beit kodshe hakodshim. Who got the better deal?
Binyamin.
Where's that? I had a map. Oh, here. Here, you see this? Right? You know this picture. So this is Yehuda. And this is, actually the truth is, it's like this. It's not really north-south. It's, the line goes, in other words, no, it would be like this. It would be like this, right? In other words, this is the north and this is the south, east and west, right? You know, the Sha'arim of Beit HaMikdash opened to the east. But the border kind of went like this, right? Even though Yehuda is to the south and Binyamin is to the north, the border runs this way. So Yehuda has the outer parts and Binyamin has the inner parts. But there's this little spitz. You see this? You see it miscolored here, right here by the Mizbeach. V'ritzua haita little spitz haita yotzet mechelko shel Yehuda v'nechneset mechelko shel Binyamin uva mizbeach panui. And on that little spitz is where the mizbeach sits, or at least part of the mizbeach. V'haya Binyamin atzadik mitzte'er aleha b'chol yom. And Binyamin was disturbed by this all day, every day. Livloa, he wanted to like reacquire it. Shne'emar chofef alav kol hayom. When it's the brachat Binyamin, that he's chofef alav kol hayom. He's doeg. He's worried. He's concerned. He's anxious. He wants it. Lefichach zacha Binyamin v'nasa ushpizkan l'shchina. What's ushpizkan? Ushpizkan.
The host.
What's ushpizin?
Guests.
The guests. Right, so in other words, because he had such desire, such anxiety, such passion, so for that one little piece, so he was zoche to get the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'haytana savar lo nitchak Yerushalayim l'shvatim d'tanya. Right, so that Mishnah, what does that imply? This map, what does this map imply?
That Yerushalayim is not owned by
one person. No, that Yerushalayim is divided between the Shvatim. And you can see where the border goes. This is Yehuda and this is Binyamin. There's a machlokas. Is Yerushalayim divided or not? So this map, the Gemara, the Mishnah that is represented in this map, supports the idea
that it was
Nitchalka l'Shvatim. But there's another source that goes the other way. Ein maskirin batin biYerushalayim mipnei she'enan shelehen. When the Olei Bavel would come, when the Olim, the Olei Regel would come, there was a halacha. There's no Airbnb in Yerushalayim. You cannot rent out houses, apartments, even beds in Yerushalayim. Why?
Because they're not yours.
Because they're not yours. Now, you might have a right of possession that you have an apartment in overlooking the Kotel. Right? You can keep your stuff there. And you can even lock the door at night. But if somebody comes, you can't charge them rent. Because technically speaking, property in Yerushalayim is common property of everyone. I can't go to the park and put up a toll booth and say, you're only allowed to come to the park if you pay a toll. It's public property.
They do that here on the beaches all the time.
No, who does that?
There's no beaches in Yerushalayim.
Some people,
the
no.
Cities. No,
I'm not talking about the cities. I'm talking about the places where it's not the cities. Where private people have done it.
Then they can't do it, right?
No, they do.
Right?
But not Yerushalayim. There's no beaches in
Yerushalayim.
That's true. They're bigger than you are.
So is there this idea that you can't rent out space in Yerushalayim? This is something that the realtors do not seem to know about.
That means that Cinema City can't charge me money for sitting in their building. The fact that they want to play a movie is their business. I'm just sitting here.
I don't know. They can charge you to, if you come to my house, I can charge you for the food. But I can't, right? And that's why, so there was this minug that since the Balabatim couldn't charge the Ole Regel, so the Ole Regel would give them the orot of the karbanot. So you have to give them something. You have to recognize that they're putting you up in your house. So you have these two sources. One supports one supports the other. And you can, if you can't wait to find out what the answer is, you can learn ahead. And we'll continue next week.
Have a great trip.
Tzadzarabah.